Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to another episode with Research with NJ. So today I am in Canberra, Australia. I came here for some sort of training program with Australian National University and happened to caught Angad Singh from Nasuto Apartments. He's a relief manager basically in hospitality and tourism. He happens to be having a bachelor's in hospitality and tourism from IHM Pusa Institute, Delhi, and did his master's in hospitality and tourism from Southern Cross University in Australia. So welcome, Angad. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Nam?
Thanks. We'll be talking about the hospitality and tourism in general and, you know, taking some specific topics as to understand what the industry looks like and how the economy, you know, rely on hospitality and tourism in this sector and in the whole scenario as well with the economy in concern. I want to touch what exactly is hospitality and tourism and what exactly Nasuto does in Australia. What exactly this chain is all about?
So Nasuto is basically their apartment hotels. Right. So we give fully self-contained apartments. They're for long-term and short-term rents, even for one-nighters. So we've got 10 properties in Australia and we have 4 in New Zealand.
All right.
So it's an upcoming chain. They started off in 2019 and they're doing pretty well.
Looks like one. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
So we've got, the parent company is from Japan.
All right.
And so basically they're just investing money in Australia now, which is pretty good. And the growth is great for Australian economy.
All right.
As such. So yeah.
So basically, like, what exactly is this hospitality industry? Like, it's just, you know, like, people see this as, is this something like hospitals? People are working in hospital or like, are we talking about hospitals?
No, when we say hospitality, it's basically anything and everything from restaurants, hotels, bars, anything to do with tourism. You got Make My Trip and things like that, or you've got Thomas Cook here, Booking.com, all of that. It generally, and that's hospitality, all in all. So anything to do with F&B, food and beverage, you've got housekeeping, nothing to do with hospitals as such, but yeah, hotels.
So basically, if our Indian audience wants to understand, the most simplest terms would be Mehman Nawazi.
Yeah. Okay. Basically, yes.
So Mehman Nawazi, guys, if you know this word from Sanskrit or a Hindi language, so Mehman Nawazi, that's what we do in our daily homes, but probably somewhere around all of India and all of the world, people want to create a hotel or some sort of Airbnb to do this Mehman Nawazi, the hospitality that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But yes, so I'm like, how the hospitality and tourism is different from other countries? I mean, like what sort of thing goes on and
off? See, Australia is basically, even though it's a continent, it's a country, it's still an island.
All right, yeah. Absolutely.
There is no reason for people to
not
come
visit
to Australia.
Ah.
Yeah, like apart from, we only have 2 major sectors. There's hospitality and education.
Okay.
So,
isn't agriculture one part of it? Because like they 30% of the economy is agricultural economy.
They rely on agricultural economy, but we don't get that much money in as we get from education.
Ah, okay.
And we get from tourism. Because, so basically being a country which is an island, all we have is beaches.
Okay.
And
yes,
Australia has some of the most beautiful beaches in the world.
Bondi Beach.
You've got plenty of them. And as it's said in Australia, like even if you spend every living day, you will still not be able to cover all the beaches in Australia.
Oh, yes.
So
I haven't been able to travel around Canberra, which is probably within a radius of 25 to 30 minutes.
Yeah,
but then I haven't been, but as I was only specifically here for like some work purposes. So yeah, so like how what's the difference with like the hospitality with different countries? I'm like as compared with Australia.
Hospitality in Australia is very chill.
Okay.
Like as you said, in other countries, like if you say it's very rigid or, you know, there's some, everywhere you go, different hotels have their own standards. In Australia, it's actually very chill. There's no hard and fast rule. It's not like we can't interact with guests or, you know, like we have
it's a bit of informal, but then, you know, keeping towards the particulars and, you know, maintain the standards, but then you can interact. It's a bit of informal conversation. It's just like, you know, taking first names of everyone around here.
It's the common way in Australia. We never do Mr. or something.
I had a problem with that. I can relate to it because, you know, like, I have one of the supervisors who's quite senior and he's very, you know, like, very respectable person in Australia. Yeah. And I happen to take his first name. I mean, he does not like me calling him like either by Mr. or family professor name. Or by the last name as we go around.
Yeah.
So, but for us, I mean, like for me in specific, I mean, taking first name for someone who is very senior, who is very respectable, is absolutely, you know, like, it's better to, you know, like, be off the project or off the thing. So, but yes. So there we have it. So, I mean, like, so how would you say, one of the finest hospitalities would like when we talk about hospitality, one would be the finest would be Europe, UK, US. I won't say US, but then I guess I'll take US because why not? And probably somewhere down the line in the upcoming or developing, you know, like in this sector itself, I mean, upcoming would be India as well.
Yes.
And but I think. I mean, I have experienced for the last two weeks that Australia is probably pretty chill. I mean, like, in terms of any sector, as we talk about.
Yeah.
And now that I have a specialist from hospitality, so how would you say, like, how does these three countries differ? And, you know, like, what makes Australia and Nasuto in that area special?
So, as we were discussing, so you said, like, how there are other countries who are top of the line as of now.
Yes.
And there are some that are coming up. But even in those countries, from what I've seen, with the same chains that we have in Australia, they're worldwide chains.
Yes.
Nasuto is still upcoming. It's only in these two countries in the Pacific. But with other chains, all the big hotels, even their SOPs or their standard operating procedures are very different when it comes to those countries like UK and US, which are developed economies. People are traveling for business or other reasons. Whereas in Australia, most of the travel is for leisure.
Oh, yes.
There's business travel in specific countries, specific properties cater to that, but I'd say at least 80% of the traveling is leisure travel. So that is a very big difference when you look at, if you look at Airbnbs or big hotel chains or 5-star hotel chains in UK, US and all those, there'll be all the high profile guests staying. But here it could be, they could just, we've had plenty of them stay at Nasuto itself.
I've seen lot of government officials, you know, they prefer Nasuto as compared to a lot of other chains, but which is good for the chain because, you know, it shows that what Nasuto is offering them and how they respond to that offerings. So that's
because
a good response.
We've got, like, as you've seen now, that we've got self-contained apartments, you've got a kitchenette, you've got a laundry in there. Everything is there.
You got ironing and everything. So, yeah, I mean,
Washer and a dryer. You don't have to bother about what the weather is outside, which has...
No coin punching in. Nothing at all.
It's
just
all free.
Just in there. It's all included.
Yeah, it's all in a room. You don't have to bother. There's a proper kitchen and you get utensils with it.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So, these are small things that people who are coming here to, even as you said, government officials, they sometimes need their clothes. And instead of running to a dry cleaner, it's always easy. Just chuck them in the machine. You're good to go the next day.
Oh, yes.
So those kind of offerings are what make us different from many other hotels here. And that is why we're getting a lot more business and a lot more long-term guests, as we say. People are willing to stay for 2-3 months here. So that's good for business.
And I think the location of Nasuto is basically, I mean, like, in the Canberra Central and, you know, close to universities, close to offices, government offices. I think we have, I mean, our next door neighbor is probably the Member Legislative Assembly and the ACD government office.
Yeah.
So I think
right
we'll just next corner. So, I mean, like, that's a good location. I mean, like, and how important is basically a location? I mean, this is one example, but then, like, how important is a location in hospitality and tourism and all that?
The location of a property dictates the price and the value or the worth of that property when it comes to tourism. Because if a property is, like, as you said, this one's based for you being a government employer related to them, it's easy for them to get to their offices. But if I look at it from a leisure point of view, it's all we've got the Canberra Centre right next door
as
well,
on the
opposite side.
Yes.
So they've got everything there. So that dictates basically the price. Like, if you've seen the vicinity, we've got at least 8 hotels.
Yes.
And there's another one coming up pretty soon, just around the corner from us.
Okay.
So depending on what the location is, if we take Sydney, for example, where we have 4 other Nasuto properties, they're all based at Four Corners.
Okay.
So this one near the city, this
corners
one,
of the airport, from the airport or the city?
From the airport. So you
okay, so, so this, Four Corners from the airport. That's so that, like, if anyone travels into any,
so
one
you
of
got north, south, east, west figured out.
So you if any let's just say any passengers travels in any one of the directions, you've got a property. So they will encounter Nasuto in their vicinity, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
So
that's a good idea.
Like, if you're traveling towards the west, all the big places there, we've got a Nasuto there. Further down, we've got another one.
Oh, that's great.
If you're traveling towards city or the opera house, we've got one near to it.
Okay.
So it makes business very important. And as I said, that also dictates what kind of property it is, what kind of travelers we have coming there. So that's how
the quality of travelers or passengers,
guests,
basically, it also matters.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
It matters on the location. As we said, like, being close or in the center of the city, you will, or near offices, you'll attract all the corporate clientele. But if you're next to a beach, you'll attract all the leisure clientele that wants to be there. If you've got a beach facing property, because we have one at Central Coast.
Yeah.
So that's bang on the beach. You literally get out and walk to the beach.
But then, irrespective of anyone's profession or clothes or color or anything, Nasuto welcomes everyone, I guess.
Oh, yeah. We don't judge. We've got nothing.
If you are staying, you got to pay, as simple as that. If you can pay, happy to. Please, welcome.
Yeah.
So everyone is staying, no matter like their profile or anything.
It doesn't matter how high up in the hierarchy would you be, or you could be a blue-collar worker here.
Okay.
We don't care.
As long as you can pay for the
As long as you're happy what you're having, we are happy to have you here.
Oh, that's great.
That's why we go by the, the slogan at Serv. It says, stay real.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the reality and the real part.
We'd like you as you are.
Absolutely, yeah. So, coming back to a bit of economics into this thing. So, hospitality and tourism, as you say, in Australia, they attract a lot, right?
Yeah.
And because it's one of the major sectors, industry.
Yeah, GDP.
Contributing to the GDP. So, basically, what would you say? What's the role of this industry in inflation and other aspects, other macroeconomic indicators that would be?
So
I'll start with the consumer price index. That is like inflation, basically.
Yeah.
So what would be like its contribution? Like, does it basically, hinders with it? Like, if it something goes bad, so the inflation, it's up. If something good happens in the industry, inflation can come down. Does it monitor that? Does it control inflation in some way or the other?
No. With hotels or hospitality as such, we do not directly relate or control CPI, as you said, consumer price index, or inflation.
Mm-hmm.
But because of those scenarios, we are the most impacted.
Ah, okay.
So if you say inflation goes up, or good prices going up, like current scenario in Australia is.
Yes.
So everything's going up. We are losing business because people do not have that excessive money or that cash flow to travel or to stay at different places. It impacts not only hotels, even restaurants or anywhere or bars, but people do not have sufficient cash to go and have meals out every day.
Okay.
So, in this scenario, when
there is an inflation in the country, the most, probably one of the most hit sectors would be
hospitality.
Right? So I get that. Does the government help the sector-wise? They provide some sort of relief into it? Or it's just like they wait like every other government, every other financial institution, like they wait, certain things to calm down and then, provide some sort of policy relief or relief for the industry as well. So how does this go?
So for policies, it's the same as you said for other things. They won't do anything straight up.
Yeah.
Because even though we are the biggest contributors, they still know we are getting some business, if not operating at 100%.
Okay.
But then again, those things add on to our costs as well, because with inflation, especially in these countries, the price, the wage rate goes up every year. So to cover for that rate, we would increase our prices, and that basically starts a cycle.
I mean, yeah, it's a cycle. It's a chain, basically. So, I mean, you have to increase because the staff is expecting, you know, like relief from your side as well. So that makes sense.
So the only relief the government usually gives is, like they've done for the last two tax years, instead of increasing the wages from the starting of the financial year, they do it in the middle of the financial year.
That gives us
6 months of leeway to control our prices or get it up, and then we can start paying more wages to the staff.
Yeah, I mean, like, that sounds a good plan, but then I mean, like, it could go haywire for some other industries as well. But I think so far it works for the hospitality and tourism.
For the last 2 years, it's been doing good.
So I mean, we've talked about a bit of prices and wages. So I mean, like, coming back to this, you know, the inner core of hospitality, and in a hotel chain, I mean, that is the housekeeping staff.
Yes.
So I mean, like, is it difficult to manage a housekeeping staff, because, you know, like, the front decks, the back end decks, and, you know, like, the general administration is totally different to what hospitality does, and, you know, it's difficult to keep an eye on them when they're, but I mean, so far the Nisuto is good. I mean, like, it's very, very good. And I speak from experience, because, you know, like, I've been in hospitality myself while I was in accommodation, university accommodation, but then I mean, like, so how is basically housekeeping in Nisuto?
So I would think what I'm saying is would be generalized across hospitality in Australia, because most of the housekeeping is outsourced now.
Okay.
So as a chain, we do not look after the housekeeping. We've outsourced to a different company as such. Mm-hmm. Only good thing being that company manages all our properties.
Okay.
So it makes us easy for everyone from the top to the bottom in that specific department, because it's the same standards.
Okay. Yes.
So if it's happening in one of our properties, it's bound to happen in the other one as well.
Okay.
So everything goes standardized. But yeah, so any housekeeping things, linen, everything is outsourced now. It was done post COVID.
Okay.
Because we had to cut down on costs.
Ah.
So most of our properties, if you see, we will have our own in-house laundries.
Yes.
Which have closed now.
Ah.
So we get.
So I think Canberra is a bit lucky in that.
No, Canberra. I mean, Canberra is slightly lucky on the base that it gets most of the government business.
Okay.
But from the tourism aspect, Canberra didn't get anything.
Ah. Because I mean, like, Canberra is not a beach-sided city.
It's an inland city. It's mostly a transit if people are traveling from Sydney to Melbourne. If people are heading, like, in the winter months that you were here, people are heading to the snow.
Okay. So, I mean, basically, Canberra is like a hilly or a reserve forest stuff. Kind of a city with 97% of public services.
Also being the capital of Australia.
Oh, yes. Yes. So coming back to the point, I mean, like, COVID. Yeah. So COVID was pretty bad for everyone, no doubt about it. I mean, like, a lot of major sectors, major industries were, like, you know, like, in their most terrible forms.
Yeah.
And then there were couple of sectors who were, like, performing, like, beyond their capacity. And, you know, like, they managed to do something great, but then they don't rule the world.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no particular sector
kind of
does that. But then you're like, you know, it's like a sink. So one has to do their part, the other will has to their, and it is always in the sink.
Yeah.
So how did hospitality, Nisuto, and, you know, like, managed COVID? Like, what happened to them?
During COVID, I was still having another job at a restaurant.
Yeah.
So we had to cut down, at least for here in hotels, it was more like we had to sanitize more. There were a few months in between where we could not give a room out if it's been occupied for one day.
Mm-hmm.
We need to hold it for one day and only then we can give it out.
Oh, you have to sanitize?
We have to sanitize it. We have to keep it on a 24-hour hold and then we can release the room. Basically running on half our actual numbers.
Okay.
Just because of that, because this started off. But again, if we take restaurants into scenario at that point, because hotels were the hardest hit, because we couldn't travel. We couldn't travel interstate.
Okay.
So if you are in Sydney or in New South Wales, you can only travel within New South Wales. You can't go to Queensland. You can't go anywhere.
So the state, interstate was not allowed?
No.
You can do intra, but then not interstate.
Intra was also later on, when everything was under control. When it started, it was, you had, I think, a 10-kilometer radius.
Okay.
And you can't step out of basically a local area.
Okay.
So at that time, restaurants or hotels were the hardest hit. Restaurants were hit because they could not have dine-in.
Yeah.
So it was only takeaways or deliveries.
Okay.
Again, up to a certain area.
Okay.
But as it opened up, the states opened up, and all the states had their own, because all states in Australia have their own governments.
Oh, yes, yes.
So they have their own rules.
Yeah.
So everybody opened up on their time.
Yeah, because I mean, like, you have to see, like,
what's happening
in the particular state. So yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't under Commonwealth, or it wasn't under the federal.
Yeah.
It was basically their own state deciding.
So they have their autonomous powers up now, right?
Yeah.
But now, I mean, like, now the COVID is, like, you know, declined. And I think things are back to normal, a bit normal. So
yeah.
I mean, like, because, you know, we're still experiencing some sort of effects after COVID.
Yeah. Some there, but yeah, it's back to, coming back to normal. We can't say back to normal all the way yet.
Yeah.
But most of it is getting their businesses picking up, which is good. So, yeah.
I mean, like, and any oxygen problem, I mean, like, because, I mean, like,
not
lot of subcontinent countries, I mean, like, they
we
like,
did not have that much, probably because our density of population in Australia is pretty low as compared to other countries. Like, it's that widespread that we didn't have too many people gathering at one place.
Okay.
So that stopped the spread, and also because our rules came into effect
immediately.
Yeah. We didn't wait. The first thing our government did was we closed the borders.
Ah, yes.
So nobody could come in or get out of
the country. Yeah.
So how was
the reaction to the vaccine, basically? You know, the people's reaction to the vaccine when it was launched, because, you know, like, a lot of discussion goes around that the vaccine was not properly trialed, and, you know, like, it was not tested, blah, blues, all those colors. And, you know, like, and then the reluctancy that people showed towards, you know, getting a vaccine shot. So how was Australia's reaction, and, you know, like, and
Australia
specifically the hospitality industry itself, the people in hospitality?
So the people for hospitality, it was one of our first requirements. As soon as it came out, we did not have a choice.
Okay.
So it was as clear. So all the essential sectors, or basically anything or everything that was open during COVID, had to get a shot.
Okay. So,
if
irrespective of what vaccine was, or like whatever you're getting, you had a choice.
We had all the two major vaccines that were there for us.
Okay. All right.
So we had a choice between them. We could get whatever we want. But yeah, it was a prerequisite. Because we were working in the industry, the first thing we had to do was get a shot.
Okay.
As compared to the general public, we were prioritized. Because we, specifically in hospitality, we are in guest-facing.
Yes, yes, industry. Yes.
We have to talk to people. And as a country, Australia went nearly, say, on a 80-20 ratio, with 80% of them happy and they were fine to get the vaccine.
Okay.
Because if they got vaccinated, they could go to restaurants.
Okay.
They could travel interstate.
Okay.
And they could fly out.
So they had different reasons for having the vaccine, which is good. Which is a good
basically
motivation.
There was some incentive.
Yes.
To go and get it.
Yeah, it's a good motivation. It's a good inspiration as well.
Overall, rollout was pretty good in Australia, because they rolled out the first shot, and eventually in the next 3 months they even rolled out the second one.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so I mean, like, so we understand this rollout of vaccine, basically. So, but like, what happened to the housekeeping assistants? I mean, like, housekeeping guys, because, you know, like, since it's outsourced now.
Yeah.
So what happened with them?
So we either asked them to join the same company.
Okay.
Because that was the easiest way in, and they still had their job, and they went as contractors, so better pays, I'm guessing. And that was it. So the laundry and all shut down. Saved us on electricity bills, though. But, yeah.
Good motivation again.
Yeah, give and take.
But I mean, like, you know, like, because I mean, I ask housekeeping because, you know, like, they probably are the minimum, the people who get minimum wages, right?
Not in Australia.
Okay, that's a good start. So
it's,
what happens with them?
It's even waged.
Okay.
So we are all, or at least not with us, at least all the normal working staff, they're all covered under an award.
Okay.
And they all get wages based on their skills.
Okay.
And based on their level or seniority.
Okay, so they follow the hierarchy as well, and plus it's even out properly. It's nothing like you just have to get the minimum wages.
No. They can't do that.
Okay.
Because there's, even if they're getting the minimum, the company needs to be answerable why they're being paid the minimum.
Okay. So even they have skills.
Yeah. If they have skills, they are meant to be paid what the skill set deserves.
Yeah. All right. So basically, I mean, like coming back to this, I forgot actually a lot of things. But yes, I mean that's a good thing that I forgot, so that I can, you know, I don't write things, so people, you understand, I have nothing on my paper other than his introduction. So what's the job of a relief manager? I mean, like, what's the hierarchy and how this relief manager works, basically, like this position work, and how does you work in that scenario?
So as a relief manager for Nisuro, I look after three states. I've got New South Wales, ACT, that's Canberra, and Victoria, that's Melbourne. So there's seven hotels that come under me.
Okay.
And whenever the general managers need to take leave,
okay,
I would be moving to that place and covering that property or that hotel for that duration. All
right.
So basically, I move around, look after all the properties, look after the management. And while I'm not doing that, I am usually working at some other projects back at the head office.
Ah, okay. That's good. So is this just your role, or is this a general job description for a relief manager all around?
So this is a general description for a relief manager. It depends from property to property, or it basically depends from chain to chain rather. For bigger chains, they may not have a relief manager because they'll have a bigger hierarchy in the hotel who's willing to cover for while the general manager's away. So they have acting managers and all that. But in smaller chains or properties which have a lot of distance, like I only cover the East Coast, as we said.
Yes.
Western Australia is covered by somebody else altogether.
Okay. So there is Nisuro in Western Coast as well. Oh, that's right.
So we've
got
Western Australia's got three properties, and again New Zealand has its own relief manager.
Okay.
So for Nisuro, this is what the role looks like. The basic description is same across the job, but different brands or different chains have their own.
Okay, so everyone has a night manager, a Tom Hiddleston, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So everyone has a Tom Hiddleston. Tom Hiddleston, right?
It's, as I said, it's like, it's a generic way of things.
Yeah.
The specific ones change, but yeah, as a relief manager, the role is similar, that we have to travel from one property to another to look after the property.
I mean, like, but they all have night managers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, everyone has Tom Hiddleston. Guys, remember, so just watch that one, not the Indian one. That's not a good one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like Anil Kapoor so much. I mean, I used to like him, but not now. Plagiarism, guys, plagiarism. He's just recreating the same thing with same dialogues, but in Hindi, of course, which is no fun. Yeah. Anyway, so I mean, like, so I mean, I wanted to make a good comparison with night manager, but anyway,
I worked as a night manager.
Okay, so how was your experience in that scenario?
No, mine was pretty chill, because again, it was similar to the property I'm currently in.
Okay.
It was an apartment hotel, so no dramas, nothing, just sit, relax, do your paperwork, go home.
So you didn't have a guest who was cartailing anything?
Nope, nothing like that. No dramas at all. No drunk guest either. Like, we should just turn them away from the door, like, thank you.
that is great. So basically, we understood that what relief manager is just to relieve the other person who wants to go on a vacation or leave some sort of. And most probably is like the general manager of that particular property, right?
Yeah.
In a chain.
In a chain.
So, yes. Okay, tell us about your experience, a bit of your experience about the masters that you did in hospitality and tourism, and like what it means to do a H&T masters from Australia as compared to someone who is doing in India, because I think you did your bachelor's from IHM, which is again one of the prominent institutes in India for hotel management. So what's the difference between the two education?
So the main difference between the education system in India and as compared to in Australia was, in Australia the education is research based.
Okay.
So we were reading from a book and writing it down. We had no books during the entire course. We only had one book that was for our research, that's it. Apart from that, We did not have any exams.
Okay, that's
good. Out of, I think, 16 units that I had, only 4 of them had exams.
Okay.
And they weren't like something major. It was just for fun, 20 marks or something like that, or
okay.
open books.
Okay.
They basically, the main difference, as I said, was in Australia, more weightage is given on your concepts or on your clarity of concepts as compared to reading and copying it out.
Okay. Like the cramming part.
Cramming part. There was nothing to cram. They want you to learn and understand what it is. So, and you can do it your own way.
Okay.
So there's no hard and fast that, oh, if this is written, it has to be this way.
Okay.
It's your own
interpretation of what about the concept or about the theory that is presented there. So yeah.
So okay. You do your own research, you go through research papers, you reference them, you learn a lot of things, and that helps you because you, and the best part being, you get to pick your own subjects.
Oh yeah.
Even in masters, like I had 8 subjects that were fixed.
Yeah.
That everybody had to say, and that the other 8 were based on my liking.
Okay, so that makes your speciality.
Yeah. So
okay, that's great.
It's basically, if I don't want to focus mostly on tourism, I picked up more related to the service industry or hotels. You can do vice versa. There was marketing or events.
Okay.
Basic, whoever wants to do or wants to learn more about a specific part.
Okay. So I mean, like, so
that.
I think the impression that I get from you is like, you know, it's almost similar to, like, to an MBA. But it's just, but in this scenario, it's not MBA, it's hotel and hospitality and tourism.
Yeah.
And in the same, as in MBA, you get to pick MBA in finance, MBA in marketing,
yeah.
MBA in, I think, operation
yeah.
management or other things. So you get to pick your own speciality in hospitality as well.
Yeah.
Right. So someone can do a core in hospitality, a core or... core in
tourism
or admin, but that admin is based on hospitality,
yeah.
not
so
the business admin.
It'll be like the back end, say, if you say like somebody is going into HR.
Yes.
You can do an MBA, but if you do a hospitality, and we have a course in HR as well.
Yeah.
So that looks after the human resources in
hospitality
or in hotels or big chains.
So how is that difference, if I may ask a quick question on this?
So I'm guessing in corporates, because it's more like a 9-to-5 thing.
Yeah.
And with, thanks to COVID, it's more like you can work from home. We can't, apparently. We tried.
Okay.
We are a guest-facing job. We have to be there to work.
So basically, I'm like, so how does that HR aspect
HR
work?
HR is more like, because we have different shifts.
Okay.
So HR needs to understand why people may complain, or why there may be a difference in opinion for somebody who's doing it, who starts early in the morning, or who's doing later in the evening, or maybe a night shift.
Okay.
So that's a very big difference when we compare it to just a normal HR or a corporate HR. For somebody who's doing a 9-to-5, they won't have that much issues, say, with holidays or something, because they're getting their Saturday, Sundays.
Yeah.
We don't have those offs.
Yeah.
So HR in hospitality needs to understand how our industry operates, what are our working demands,
mm-hmm.
and to come up with ideas or solutions for us based on that, because hospitality is a... We don't get offs. We don't have holidays.
Okay.
It's a 365-day operation. We can't close.
Yes, yes, yes. I can understand.
So
what would be the difference in the skill set of a corporate HR? I'm like, I'm just asking a ballpark. I'm like, no specifics, because of course you can't like...
Can't comment on that.
Yeah. I mean, like, because, you know, it's a different segment of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like, just a ballpark, like in your opinion or in your view, like what would be the difference in the skill set?
Skill set being... When you're doing a 9-to-5, you're more focused on what issues can occur in an office environment.
Okay.
Here, we don't have an office environment. So, they need to understand what issues can occur, starting, say, from dealing to a guest, to dealing among staff, dealing with managers, all the way up till what can happen on the job.
Okay.
They need to understand there are events that happen in this industry that will never happen in an office.
Okay. Yeah.
Like something happens in a guest room, there could be casualties or accidents or anything like that. So an HR needs to have that skill set to actually deal with all those problems and also help the employees deal with those kind of issues.
Okay.
So that, I think that is a very big difference. And as I said, it's more like a round the clock operation for us.
Yeah.
So they need to understand what problems we may have, which a 9-to-5 getting their Saturday Sundays would never think of.
Yeah. So basically, coming back, so I mean, like we were talking about what do you call it? The education difference, how it's research based in Australia and, you know, a bit different in India or because you have two educations, bachelor's in India and master's in Australia. So, I mean, like, you're capitalizing on this aspect of research-based education. So what was your thesis on? I mean, like, I guess you did one.
Right? Yeah, so master's, the last semester, my thesis was in mental health in professional kitchens.
Okay.
So even though in Australia, mental health is a very big thing.
Okay.
People are working on it, for it. But nobody bothers about hospitality in specific kitchens because I was a chef.
Okay.
So I come from kitchens all the way up to management. I've seen the back end.
Okay,
I've done the front.
Yeah.
So that is why I picked that topic, because nobody, as you said, nobody care, as I said, sorry, nobody cares about hospitality or what happens in a kitchen.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, everybody sees on TV shows or reality shows that we have that, oh, the chef's angry. They never understand.
The head chef is angry, yeah.
Yeah. They never understand why the chef is angry.
Okay.
Or what kind of stress that person has.
Okay, yeah.
So that was my research on why we have mental health issues in the kitchen and why we should look into those things and try to help people out.
Okay. So, and like, is there a possibility of you doing a PhD in future? I mean, like, because, you know, like, this industry is some way or the other based on research work as well. And they inherit research work very, like, you know, like, very seriously.
Yep. So possibly, yep, in coming years I am planning to do a PhD.
Okay.
We shall see what happens at that time.
Any proposals? A vague one. I mean like,
I was picking up on infidelity.
Okay. Yeah.
In hospitality, but that may have some ethics issues coming into it.
I mean, look, yeah.
We shall see when that happens.
But I mean, it's a broad area and needs to be, you know, like, figured out properly, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, with proper audience, and, like, it just can't be the words, you know, picking up words and everything. So it really requires proper approach, proper researched proposal. I mean, the proposal has to be properly researched. It just can't be, okay, I had a thought.
Yeah.
Like, I have a dream. So it can't be something like that.
It needs to be a very
polished one. Yes.
Polished one. And especially with such a topic.
Yes. I mean, it could go many places. Many places. But what place you want to take this, it has to be structured.
Yeah.
And I think it requires, I think, committee's approval. It might require.
It will definitely require the ethics approval.
And probably,
which is like the hardest thing to get.
I think, and I think someone who is really willing to, a supervisor who is really willing to see what can come out of this thing. So a very strong proposal on this one.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. I mean, this is something new. I mean, this industry works wonder, no doubt about it. So,
yeah.
I mean, the concepts are different throughout the world, throughout the region, throughout a country, a city. Every chain has their own, you know, aspects. Every chain has their own terminologies, and it's totally different. I mean, like, you know, you, as you said, there is a relief manager. There could be a relief manager in smaller chains, but a bigger chain have a different kind of a person, but doing the same kind of a job.
Yeah.
It might not be there, but then someone is covering their shift. It's totally different.
It's a very different world in itself.
So how does the bar aspect, you know, the bars and lounges works in such a hotel industry or hospitality industry for that matter?
So that's a very, I'd say that's the cash cow for our industry.
Okay.
If we take hotels or if we even take restaurants, for example, because being a restaurant manager, I was managing two outlets.
Okay.
And selling alcohol is probably, it is something, and if we compare it to food,
mm-hmm.
alcohol will give us 400% profit on
okay.
a drink.
Okay.
So per drink, we were making that much.
Okay.
So it's a very crucial aspect. But again, it is one of the most nastiest aspects as well.
Okay.
Because you have to cater to people who may be drunk.
Yeah, and to manage that kind of a crowd after having drinks, it's difficult.
Yeah.
And it's almost like being in an airplane. And being the steward or stewardess, and, you know, like,
they're trying to control
a person if someone has had more than their limits.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
But
yes.
If you say as a bar, I'd say that is the glamorous part of our industry.
Okay.
You can see there's like fire and everything involved now, and people are doing wonders in that area.
Okay.
Especially even in Australia, there's the cocktail trend is pretty hot. Even as simple as Indian restaurants are doing cocktails now.
I think in India, I mean, like, cocktails have been a, like, backdrop. I mean, like they have been there. They have been there, but
nobody's.
No, I mean, like it was there in a different form, not specifically the hard booze, but in a different way, maybe medicinal way, or herbs, or any other way. But then, cocktails were there. I mean, that's my take. I may not have a concrete proof as to prove my theory or hypothesis so far, but then I think it was there. I mean, like, our parents used to give us a bit of brandy.
Yeah, with hot water.
Yeah, just a spoon, just a few drops, just to, provide a sort of a shield through winter months. So, I mean, it was nice.
They're still there, all the old school remedies using alcohol.
Yeah.
But here it is more like they're changing and
it's more of a lifestyle, I think.
Yes. They're twisting the things. It's more like, as you say, like you'll have a martini like James Bond, no?
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean, why not? I mean, I love martini, no doubt, but I am on fast generally. So nothing so far and nothing afterwards as well. So I am on fast since 4th of July, if someone wants to know that. Since 2 months, so I cannot have any drinks, and probably I eat only one time, so that's my fast.
Yeah.
Only water, and that is to a specific amount, specific quantity. 1 liter water before food, 1 liter water after food, just balances out. Nothing more, nothing less. And I have to cook a specific quantity of food, so can't go beyond that. ऐसा नहीं है कि मतलब like I can just go on and just grab everything and
hard lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right? That's a very hard lifestyle.
So basically that's all about me about the booze right now. But I'm a fan of martini, dry martini with three olives, simple, and shaken not stirred. I always like shaken not stirred, just the classic James Bond style. I can make martinis if someone wants to know. I can mix martinis.
Well,
I'm like vermouth and what's the dry spirit? Gin. So yes, I can do that. And if someone wants to really know my taste, I mean, catch me up, guys. So we can sit down for a bottle or something, and I can probably share my interest in that area. But coming back to the hospitality, so how does the kitchen work? Basically, kitchen is very important. Cleanliness is important in that kitchen. There are certain rules. I mean, food safeties, personnel safeties, and hygiene. So in a chain like Nasuto or any other like big chains, I mean, what would be the the ideology behind it?
So for kitchens, I started off with Marriott.
Okay.
In India.
Okay.
In a kitchen.
Oh, that's good.
So if I take a simple thing like hygiene, is one of the most crucial aspects, because if something happens, it's a very big name.
Yes.
That's going down with it.
Yes.
So nobody could, we can't just let it be or, mix up things. It doesn't happen. Even though people say, if you're working in a kitchen, your hands go here and there.
Yeah.
We can't. We always have gloves on. We know if we're touching something else, we need to change the gloves. And nobody would stop doing that because, as I said, anything as simple as even a food poisoning thing will take down the entire brand. It won't just go, it happened
but
once.
But it does happen, but because, it's not because of the food, because of the body mechanism. Sometimes the same food does not suit to the
different
other guy,
people.
But the other guy, the same food has been tasted by the other and he's enjoying it.
Yeah.
And it suits his body. So I think the body mechanism and the weather mechanism towards
that's
food.
That's very
important.
But
the chef is, I think, aware of that, I guess. But not the body mechanism.
It's just that it comes, nobody will go on that route as the first thing.
Yes, absolutely.
They will always come back to the kitchen. They're like, you made a mistake.
Yes.
Like, so.
But it's not that easy.
Yeah, it's not that easy. It's a very, kitchen, as it is said, kitchen is the second most disciplined field. When they're comparing us with armed forces.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because we have a specific way of operating things. Everything has to be in that order.
Yeah.
And it has to go through different parts. It's not when somebody cooks a dish, it's not just one person making it.
Yeah.
There's four people involved and everybody does their part.
Yeah.
If even one of them screws up,
the dishes,
then everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
So kitchen, as you said, hygiene is very important. Discipline in that field is very important.
I mean, and then as you have researched already, I think mental health.
Yeah.
Because it's taking instructions from sous chef and head chef. I mean, it's not that easy.
Yep. So it depends on what kind of people you're working with.
Okay.
It also depends on what kind of mindset those people have. Because if you're working with somebody who's been in that job or been in that specific area for that long,
yeah,
they may have a very rigid mindset. Like,
okay,
they would like to do things in a very stuck way.
Yeah.
Which can also be taken over to many other, not specifically in kitchens, just other jobs as well.
Yeah.
If you've got a boss who's, you know, stuck in their old ways,
yeah,
they will not let you experiment. Whereas,
yes,
if I take it from what my experience has been working in kitchens in Australia, that I was free to do whatever I feel like.
It's a bit of informal in here, but then they do keep themselves to the highest standards.
They have to, because here, like, we had to do a food safety supervisor course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When it comes to alcohol, I have a responsible service of alcohol. So
yeah,
I actually have a card that tells, okay, this person can serve alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that if I over-serve somebody,
yeah, yeah,
which may not be the case in other countries, like, you're free to serve, you can serve as much as you want.
Yeah.
But here, if I over-serve, I will get a fine, not the person I serve to.
Okay.
Because it was my responsibility, that is what it is, responsible service of alcohol. I should not serve more than I deem fit. If I think that person should not be served any alcohol,
that's all.
They should not be served any more alcohol.
So he's done for the day, basically.
Yeah.
Whether he can hold it or not, I mean, like, if you feel it, so
if
that's,
it's our decision. And if we don't stick to that decision, we will get a very hefty fine.
Because if anything goes haywire, I mean, it's your responsibility.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's something new that I've learned.
Yeah.
But
if he creates any ruckus at the place or the property,
yeah,
they'll find out who was the one who served him, and boom.
Okay.
You're done.
So probably anyone who is serving me the alcohol, if I am, so, like,
I'm not on a fast
and I'm taking alcohol, so guys, relax, I can pretty much hold my drinks. And I know, like, I don't want to go beyond 3 or 4, but I have a very high capacity. But I have a very high capacity, gentlemen. So relax. You are safe with me. I am safe with you guys. So relax. It's just two way around. It's not one way.
Yeah.
It's not a one way street. So relax. So yeah, if you see me around, you know, asking for a drink or so, happy. Please be happy to serve me. I'll be happy to be served by you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll be happy to take your money.
At the end of the day, with booze, money comes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all about the money.
Yeah, that's the
game. But yeah, I mean, with the money, I mean, like, I think, I mean, it's a very, very good point that you make, that, and I think it's the law that is there in Australia that, you know, like, the person who is serving is responsible.
Yeah.
It's not the person who is asking for it. I mean, that's a good way. I mean, a very matured way and a different way to, you know, like, control,
yeah,
alcohol abuse in a bar or in a club or anywhere.
Yeah. So we've got, like, we even have some specific, you know, how we have nightclubs that are open till 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
They have specific instructions, like, we cannot serve neat drinks or we can't do shots after 11 p.m. It has to be a mixed drink.
That is bad.
That may or may not be followed. That's a different scenario. But
here, Uncle NJ goes neat. I mean, this is not fair to me now. This is not,
yep,
fair to me. I mean, like,
so
I'm not a promoter of alcohol, guys. We are not promoting alcohol in any of the ways. I mean, like, in my previous segments and episodes, we have always said that we are not promoting, but then we are trying to promote that how to control your drinks and what is necessary to be a responsible drinker.
Yeah.
You should know
it's
your limits,
important.
But we are not promoting you to drink. If you drink, you drink on your own. You take that responsibility. We are not saying that you drink, right? I am responsible for my own actions. You are responsible for your own. So that let's just make that clear. So Angad here is not trying to promote anything to you guys. So don't take it any otherwise, right? Or else he'll be very unhappy with me. He'll be ferocious with me. So I don't want that.
Drink responsibly.
Yeah, absolutely. And the person who is serving, serve responsibly, gentlemen. Yeah. So,
yeah. So yeah, very, very different set of rules as,
yeah,
compared to the bars I've previously worked with,
yeah,
or been to in different countries.
I think Europe does not have this kind of a rule, and neither
okay.
UK nor US.
Neither
so.
Does India either, because I've worked.
Yeah, I mean, like, India is way, way, way behind in this segment. But then, I mean, like, certain policies are being made. They are in pipeline, and I think that is good for the country, but then people should see them as good for the country, not take it otherwise or revolt,
yeah,
or protest in,
like,
any other form, you know, be angry. So guys, relax, please just don't be melodramatic about anything.
Yeah, it's like it's good fun till it is good fun.
Yes.
After that it just goes bad. So there's no, that's what I was saying, like even on streets here, there's specific alcohol free zones.
Okay.
So you can't even carry alcohol in your hand. You can't step out of a premises with alcohol in your hand.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
So it helps. It's basically how we are controlling a lot of issues, not just alcohol related. It is more about the safety and security for the staff who's working there, and more so for the people who are outside.
Yeah. So I just want to touch the last segment of this, basically, you know, like we've covered kitchens, we've covered bars and lounges, we've covered mostly waiting tables. Waiting tables, you know, the people who
servers,
who wait at tables, you know, our waitresses, waiters. So that part of this industry
that
also requires some mention.
Yeah,
and you know, like most of the students, most of the, like, I think people who want part-time jobs, they are the ones who generally
they would be the ones who are working, because that's like, if we come to it, even though waiting tables is highly skilled,
yes,
that is also something that has the least amount of skill set required to start.
Yeah,
whereas if we say a kitchen, I can't just have anybody walk into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if I can teach that person, okay, how to hold a plate, how to go and greet a guest.
Yeah,
but I would be cautious when I'm asking somebody how to hold a knife and cut things.
Oh, absolutely. Like might cut his fingers, nails.
Yeah, so we can't take that risk. But yeah, waiting table, that's why it is one of the easiest jobs for international students when they come in.
Yeah.
Also one of the most easiest available jobs, I should say. Not like just to do, but also availability.
Yeah.
But it is a very high skill set. Like you may have seen people carrying 3-4 plates together.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that is not something you just learn. Like we learned the hard way.
Oh, yes. because of the sort of education that you've been into and you've chosen. But then most of them are in a different lateral.
Yes, so, they're just there to give you a food.
Yeah. So, but then in order to understand how to hold a napkin on their left hand and how to pick up the plates, how to place the forks, cutlery on those things. Yeah, how to serve.
That's a very progressive thing. And
yes.
It takes time to learn.
I mean, yeah, like, I learned my hardest way. So, yes, I mean, like when I was housekeeping assistant, we learned the hardest way. But it was a good experience.
It is a very
it teaches you a
humbling
lot of discipline.
Experience.
Yes, humbling, and it teaches you discipline, basically. Yes. A very proper way to talk to your customers, and how to be the server and how to be off service, basically.
Yeah.
Right. So and be very vigilant of the fact that, you know, like what are allergies, allergens, and how to, you know, like tell your customer to your guest, whether you have any allergies and take care of it.
Yeah.
Most important, because knowing is just one part. And
making sure it does not happen,
it's the other one. And that's the hardest, because you know, like because kitchen is always busy. It's of multiple orders, and you know, everyone is occupied with multiple orders.
If we don't mention it from the server, it's not mentioned on the thing.
Yeah.
The kitchen will never know.
Yeah.
Because we never deal with the guests that way.
Yeah.
So it's a very crucial thing for the server to know about all these
allergies.
Even though they're minute things if we take in kitchen, but they're very important.
Yeah, I mean, a minute thing can lead to an epinephrine shot.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've seen that.
Yeah, if it goes haywire. So, if any one of you watches the Big Bang Theory, guys, I'm not promoting it, but I'm just trying to tell you that Howard in that basically had a peanut allergy. Yeah. So, if you do not, so an epinephrine shot is in your like pipeline. So it's in your future. So don't do that. Please, the people who are waiting tables, who are servers, please take care of that allergies and everything. Mm. Please do that. And I think this is an awareness call for you guys. So I mean, like,
wouldn't like anybody going to the hospital after that.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, like could lead to a lawsuit.
Easy lawsuit.
And then you know, like as an international student or any even for the domestic ones. I mean, like
it's a lawsuit on the restaurant or on the company.
And
know?
Then
that's,
I mean, like of course, I mean, like if he told you about the allergens
and you don't
and you didn't told, so it's up to you then. So that's on you. So anyway, guys, I mean, we are wrapping this with this note. So I think we have covered pretty much all the segments. So and about the hospitality and tourism, and we will take up tourism some other time, because you know, like tourism is a big area, and today we wanted to focus a bit on like hospitality itself. So I like to thank Angad on here. I mean, like, thank you so much. I mean, finally, I got one podcast in Canberra, right?
No, thank you for having me here.
Oh, absolutely. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. Honor. Thank you so much, Angad. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks.